Blog Talk Radio.
What would a Tuesday night be if we didn't have a crisis on our hands? This week, a Canes Nation totally up in arms at the disappearance of the Miami passing game. For the second straight week, the Hurricanes struggled to throw the ball down the field, finishing just with 163 yards in the overtime victory over Virginia, with two interceptions also tacked up. At least the Hurricanes are winning while they attack these problems. Now Miami goes on the road on Saturday night to NC State, a team talented enough to where you feel comfortable making a simple prediction. The Hurricanes are going to need to do better if they are going to emerge from Raleigh with a victory. Quarterback Tyler Van Dyke has, of course, been the focus of a lot of fan angst because he's either been injured in recent weeks or been struggling. Van Dyke's season began with torn ligaments in three fingers and has extended to knee issues that impacted the strength behind his deep ball Saturday against Virginia, and some say his shoulder from last season is still banged up and has some lingering effects. Van Dyke has been toughing it out for his team, but he's also been struggling to see the field and read coverages when opponents have thrown wrinkles at him. Nobody really knows if the physical nicks and bruises are at least partially responsible for Van Dyke's erratic play, but the mental side of the problems are certainly coachable, and offensive coordinator Shannon Dawson has been all over that challenge this week. Dawson also put some of the onus on himself to put Van Dyke in better situations with his play calls, which have been ignoring the backs and tight ends for the most part, where teams are simply giving Miami the flat and daring them to check down. Virginia, for example, was not even covering those guys on some plays. It was something that Miami mysteriously failed to exploit. So tonight, as we embark on a new edition of Canes Sport Live, we're going to try to unlock the mystery of the Miami offense and where it has gone, and look at the prospects of it returning in a big-time way Saturday night on the road in Raleigh. Hello again, everybody. I'm Gary Furman, the publisher of CaneSport.com. We once again welcome you to the People Show, CaneSport Live. As always, this is your show. It's going to be driven by your participation. The call-in number is 563-999-3550. That's 563-999-3550. You hit 1 on your keypad if you want to come on the show. We have more than 100 open phone lines, plenty of room for everybody to call in and participate this evening. So this year, I will once again be joined by Azubi Charles, and he'll be joining us here in a little bit, and we will get his opinions on the matters at hand. But, you know, the struggles of the Miami offense have certainly placed some extra stress on this week's road trip to Raleigh. You know, you're going to be playing under the lights on a Saturday night. It's not going to be an easy out at all. Anybody anticipating an easy game this weekend is deceiving themselves a little bit. The last two have gone down to the wire. The last two have been in overtime. I'm not going to sit here and predict the third straight overtime game, but I feel pretty sure that this one is also probably going to be close in the fourth quarter, and Miami's going to really have to be on top of their game. I mean, there's no doubt about it, and they are going to need to score a little bit more than they have in these last two games at home. So tonight I want to hear what you guys think about all this. I would love to get a whole bunch of first-time callers on the show tonight, get some different opinions. The number, 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. You hit the 1 on that keypad if you want to come on the show. We are going to begin tonight in the 845, where you are now live on K-Sport Live. How are you doing this evening?
I'm good, Gary. How are you?
How you doing, Greg? How's everything this week?
I'm okay. I got a few topics here. Now you know why you've been getting calls for as long as this show's been on, bitching about Miami football. Did you hear about Dabo Swinney getting phone calls on his show, bitching about his 4-4 record?
I saw that.
11 wins last year in the playoff, 6 or 7 years in a row, 2 national titles, and they're giving him crap. And we've had 20 years of hot garbage. I mean, there's no – now you know why you're getting calls like this for 20 – whatever.
Were you surprised? I was surprised.
If we ever had success like that again, I wouldn't be calling you bitching about anything. Okay. Why do we come out flat every week, Gary, with the same garbage game plan? First play, inside zone. We have this great offensive line. We had 88 yards rushing going into overtime last week. That's not good, Gary. That's terrible. What is going on with you? So this is Mario butting in. Mario should just recruit and let the coaches coach, because this guy, his influence is turning off recruits. Did you hear this kid Lofton's looking around now? He was at
Yeah, that was false. We spoke to Lofton. He said that was false. He's locked in with Miami. He's not, I mean, listen, he's a good player. Some people think he's a really good player. If he were to defect at some point, I wouldn't, you know, be too overly concerned about it. But right now, he's telling us all the right things. But, you know, Greg, what you're talking about is the run game concepts. And, you know, the thing is Mario brought those with him to Oregon and now here from Alabama. And they've been proven to work. What you see Miami doing in the run game has been proven to work at a high level at Alabama, and that's what he's molding the running game around. Now, you know, if you're trying to say that he's forcing Shannon Dawson to run more than he would like, I would say, I don't know. I mean, maybe there's a little bit of truth to that, but they've really been pretty much 50-50 run-pass, and I'd have to go back and look at the numbers, but I think Shannon Dawson was relatively close to 50-50 run pass last year at Houston. I'm a lot less concerned about the running game than I am the passing game. You know, to me, the offensive line has performed great this year. The running backs are better, performing great. Miami needs to get back to being much more efficient and effective in the passing game and take what's given them a little better. Like last week, Greg, I'm watching, and nobody was covering the guys in the flats. I mean, it was wide open. I'm thinking to myself, like, who is up in the booth? Why aren't they yelling and screaming down to Shannon Dawson? Nobody is covering our guys in the flats. I was really surprised that Miami never exploited that on Saturday. And these are little things that are breaking down that I think Mario Cristobal, with a new coaching staff working together for the first time, I got to believe he's addressing those. I mean, I know the weird thing is, though, we're 8 games into the season. You'd like to think you've already got everything figured out. But the one thing I've noticed is there's not one on-field coach that's up in the booth upstairs. And, you know, maybe that's something that they need to look at. Even if it's an analyst, you know, going forward, it might be too late for this year, but maybe you could find a veteran offensive mind that can be your eyes up in the box and work with Shannon Dawson. You know, that might be worth trying. I certainly don't profess to have all the solutions. I just know that what we are seeing, Greg, is not the finished product that we would like to be seeing going into week 9 of the season.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, where was this story about Tyler Van Dyke, three torn ligaments when he was throwing five touchdowns against Texas A&M?
Yeah.
Was he hurt then?
Hey, his fingers were hurt, but I don't think his knee was hurt then, and I don't know about the shoulder and stuff, but it's now, listen, the injuries aren't an excuse. Tyler can throw the ball, okay? Tyler needs to throw the ball the right places, that's all. And to me, part of that, at least equal to me, is on Shannon Dawson's shoulders. And he kind of alluded to that on Monday when we spoke to him. He's not looking to deflect it away from himself. He's the quarterback coach. He's the offensive coordinator. And Tyler needs to not just play better, he needs to be coached better. And I'm sure that there's a lot of attention in that direction this week.
Okay. By the way, he performed much better under Rhett Lashley than these other two guys.
It was a different – wait, time out, Greg. You're making a great point. And, you know, I want to point out that was a different offense. I believe that it was a simpler offense than what he's been running the last 2 years. And maybe Tyler, and we may not have known it in that first year, maybe he struggles to read defenses. And you know, if he has more than one quick read and unload the ball. And, you know – The thing that I've noticed about Tyler is that if he is seeing a defense that he has prepared for all week and he understands, he's pretty damn good, okay? It's a guy that could put up 300-400-yard games without blinking. I mean, he's done it throughout his three-year playing career at Miami. Constantly can throw for 300-400 yards. Where he gets into trouble is when teams start throwing wrinkles out there and start showing him things that he did not prepare for during the week. And that's when he really struggles to see the field. And I think defensive coordinators have picked up on this and are, as they should be, trying to game plan to take advantage of that.
Okay, I agree. Now, last point. Okay. My question is, I got to give Mario a lot of credit for what he built. He started to build at Oregon. He left Lanning. Who's our Dan Lanning going to be? Who's going to come in here after Mario builds it to a certain point and can't get over the top? Who's going to be our Dan Lanning? Because
I don't think we're going to have a Dan Lanning anytime soon. I think Mario's going to be here for a while. Before we like overly panic here, like let's remember that this, I mean, and I'm going to get jumped on for this, but this is really a 7-1 football team right now. Okay.
I agree.
Like, so let's not overly panic. This is year two. And I know I said before the season, they'd be 8-4. And right now they're 6-2, but they really have played to 7-1. And these last games are not going to be easy, Greg. This game Saturday night is a bear on the road at night in a night game in Raleigh. This is not going to be an easy out at all. And then you got to go to Florida State, what I think possibly could be another night game at Doak Campbell. I mean, that certainly obviously won't be a tough out. And Louisville's playing as good as anybody in the ACC this year. So I don't know, man. We got some work to do these next 3 weeks. And they are going to need to be much better, and it's going to start with being able to throw the ball.
Well, if NC State's not a great team by any stretch.
They're not a great team, but they've been playing better, and they're at home on Saturday night.
Okay. Isn't that Armstrong the quarterback for NC State?
No, they benched him.
Oh, they did? Okay. I didn't know that. Okay. All right, thank you. I'll talk to you next time. Appreciate it.
All right, Greg, thank you for getting us started. Thank you for being part of the show. All right, let me bring in Azubi here and get him integrated into the show. Azubi, we've been talking a lot about the offense, and we're sitting here 8 games into the 2023 season, and we're talking about Miami's ability to throw the ball down the field and score points. It's a little bit strange, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is, dude. I feel like the first four games were just like, this passing attack's amazing. This is the best thing ever. You know, we see what, you know, Miami can do against, like, Texas A&M, like Greg mentioned a little bit, throwing all those touchdowns, all those stuff. And, you know, now, I mean, the team is still 6-2, and that's a positive. I think last year at this point they were, what, 4-4 or something like that. But, you know, it's that's what happens. You know, you get thrown curveballs throughout the year, you know. The season's not going to be, you know, butterflies and rainbows the whole time. You're going to get hit with adversity. And the biggest thing is how do you respond from it now? How do you find a way to, you know, make that a less of an issue and more of a positive for your team and things like that? So, obviously, no one predicted that this would be the thing that kind of hindered Miami. Maybe someone thought it would be, you know, injuries across the team or, you know, another thing. But it's a passing game. I mean, it could be much, much worse than that, and I feel like that's a very fixable thing, and I think it will get fixed, you know, in the next 2 or 3 weeks, and I feel like it has to get fixed in the next 2 or 3 weeks if Miami wants to finish this year strong, because you cannot be one-dimensional going against, you know, Florida State, which is the number 4 team in the country, and a Louisville, like you mentioned, is playing amongst, you know, one of the best teams in the country. I believe they're 13th in the nation this year, so you got to fix, you know, the passing attack, and if there's a game to do it, you got to do it against NC State, you know, on the road. As hard as that sounds.
Yeah, you can't be one-dimensional against NC State, much less Florida State. I have total respect for what the Miami is going to be facing on Saturday night. Now, you said the season's not going to be all butterflies and what? What was that other adjective you threw in there?
Butterflies and rainbows.
Oh, butterflies and rainbows. Oh, okay. So it's going to be... How does it become butterflies and rainbows again? How do they fix this passing game issue?
I just feel like it comes up to Tyler being 100% healthy and on his A game, and just Shannon Dawson, you know, figuring out why they're paying him, you know, all that money to be the offensive coordinator. And if I had the, you know, 100% correct answer, I feel like I'd be a millionaire right now. But combination of those two things, and you know, you mentioned a little earlier, they're both kind of taking blame for things. You know, Shannon Dawson saying it's on him. Obviously, Tyler is going to say, you know, he has to take the blame for being a better quarterback. But, hey, offensive coordinator, quarterback coach, and quarterback, get on the same page. If you have to have a sit down and say, hey, what's going on? What's working? What's not working? And just go over that for a day or two and try to get things back on track. Just whatever you can do to kind of fix these issues, because these are simple, you know, issues that can be fixed, but that weren't an issue at the beginning of the year. So just sitting down, kind of rekindling that connection and getting back on the same wavelength, I feel like it's going to be key for Tyler and for Shannon to see that passing game kind of get back to where it was in the beginning of the year.
Well, you mentioned Texas A&M a minute or two ago, and to me the difference that week was Miami had the entire offseason to prepare for Texas A&M. And they knew what they were going to see defensively, and they were prepared for it, and Tyler played great, you know? You know, now you got to start getting deeper into the season. These teams that you're playing, like, the coaches in the ACC are pretty good now, and these defensive coordinators you're going against now have, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 games of tape that they're studying, and they now have a better handle on Miami's personnel and a better handle on what Shannon Dawson is trying to do with Miami's personnel. So it's become a little more complicated, and the challenge has become greater for the OC and obviously the quarterback. And, yeah, they do have to do it together. They do have to figure it out together. They very much go hand in hand. The one thing I feel very strongly about, which annoys the crap out of some of our subscribers at canesport.com on the message boards, is I don't believe bailing on Tyler Van Dyke is by any stretch the answer to solving these problems. I mean, you know, you went through, you made a decision. He is your number one quarterback. Your number two quarterback is a true freshman, did a great job with a very abbreviated game plan against Clemson. And if you had to play Emery Williams for some reason, you would try to figure out a way to do it. But playing Tyler Van Dyke and getting him performing at the high level he is capable of performing at is by far the best option for the Miami Hurricanes as they go into the toughest stretch of their season here the next 3-4 weeks. What do you guys think out there? Let's hear from you. 563-999-3550. 563-999-3550. You hit the 1 on your keypad if you'd like to come on the show. And we're going next to the 757, where you're live on Kingsport Live.
Okay, I'm going to make this real quick. For EMAC, for you, and that Trump Tony Dorsett set that ran his mouth last week, I think I heard Shannon Dawson say today, if I had to use Jakari Brown, he's ready to play. Okay, I'm tired of y'all. Y'all three a bunch of clowns. EMAC cursed the gal so bad on the board today, it was ridiculous. Inexcusable. And Gary, let me help you, bro. Let me help you out. You going to leave my boy KAM alone. He's a Miami Northwestern bred boy. He gives his blood and soul. Tyler Van Dyke don't like Miami. He just there. He's trash, but I need him to play good for pro games. You always defend him. You find an article on Cam and say he gave up 168 yards. But you never come out here and say, oh, Tyler Van Dyke, he does this bad. All you're saying tonight is we got to get a better passing game. Well, who would start with? The man can't read defense. You got other guys on these other sites that say, hey, the man can't read defense. He goes on, he's out of the zone. He can't do it. But he better find a way. Because you can play Emory, and Jacor can play too. So, E-Mac, you want my cell number? Come after me. Tony Dorsett, you talked that trash last week, but you ain't got a leg to stand on because you ain't the coach, Gary, or E-Mac ain't. Dawson said it. He could play if we need him. That's all you need to hear. Now, unless you got some inside scoop on the backside of it, you can come with it. But stay off Cam, bro. Need Camelo. And all them other people talk about our running back. They talk about Chaney. Man, that man been through injuries. He play his ass off. Stop it. Damn it. If you don't like our players, cut your ass. But you got to take the hit for your boy, TVG, because you ride him into the sunset. You ride him in the day. You ride him at night. The man ain't no good. I see anybody. But we need him to win. Now, you can go ahead and say what you want to say. But I'm waiting. Say what you got to say, because I keep going, because I'm really hot with y'all. I'm hot. And another thing, you think I'm going to pay $75 to come meet you? Bro, we going to meet. I ain't paying $75.
How am I supposed to say what I'm going to say?
If you really want to see me, you'll make a way. All that trash talking you do, stand up, man up. That's what I always tell y'all. I got my cell number. You want my cell number? 757-560-0. You got my number now. You got a lot of talk, bro, but you ain't walking the right footsteps. Hey, Zuby, I keep telling you, watch Gary. He might be a great guy, but you know what? Gary's good. Because Gary knows if I keep this trash stuff going, I get more subscribers. You just like people. You like Costco where I work. They ain't shutting down for nobody. It got to be a tornado or a blizzard as high as hell. We want money. You want subscribers. The more you got, the better your show is, bro. You do a good job alternating and sliding to the left and dancing to the right. Like when you said we shouldn't talk about players. Real quick, 3 weeks ago, you said your boy Skinner, he a bust. You try to say Nigel Kelly, he ain't doing good. The man hurt. And I still say, Kelly that bad. Tell him leave. And if Kelly that bad or if Skinner that bad, let him go. Bro, you just as bad as the people that be on the message board. You just as bad as the people on the message board, Gary. No doubt about it. I wish I could quit my job and come to SAG, but I can't.
I would love for you to quit your job and come work with us, Kane.
I know you would, but you ain't ready for this show, baby. I'll be back down there in Louisville. If I got to sleep on top of the Heineken Stadium, I'm going to find you. I'm going to get there dirt early. Once again, 757-560-6016.
Don't give out your number. I don't want responsibility when people start harassing you. Don't give out your number.
Like
please.
I said, E-Mac, he a punk. Tony Dorsett ran his mouth and talked bad about me. Oh, yeah, I used to like you, KK, but you're going to get off that black thing. I never said nothing about race because let's break it down. The white boy from Carolina runs with his feet. The Georgia Tech quarterback, he ran with his feet. Virginia quarterback almost ran all over us, too. Tyler Van Dyke is molasses. He ain't got it, bro. Period. But we need him to win these four games. So with that being said, Gary, see you in a couple weeks. Hey, Zuby, yeah, I love my change. Yeah, I spend my money. And I'm tired of the BS that Gary be sliding to the left and sliding to the right. Y'all have a nice night. Peace on that.
All right, King Kane. All right. Let's slide to the left first, okay? And let's talk about – we talked about TBD a little bit. So let's slide to the left and talk about Cam Kitchens for a minute. Okay, this whole notion that I'm on Cam Kitchens and trashing Cam Kitchens is a bunch of nonsense, okay? We talk about players. That's what we do all day long, every day. We write stories. We do analysis. We talk about players. Now, Cam is a very good player, okay? But he can't cover, which modern-day safeties have to be able to cover. Last week was a perfect example. There were six plays where he was asked to cover a man up, and all six of those, the guy he was covering caught the ball, okay? He had the play on the sideline where he whiffed on the tackle. The guy went 67 yards. Okay. Then he had the great play. That the pick six was great. Lance Guidry dialed it up. Cam got himself in position, was waiting there for the ball, just like they drew it up, caught the ball, ran it back for a touchdown, pick six. Okay. So what happens? Now they name him the ACC Defensive Back of the Week. Okay, just like last year, he had three interceptions in the Georgia Tech game, one of the worst teams in the country last year, and they named him an All-American. And the only point that I was trying to make when I made my initial comments on this was that Cam is being overhyped. You don't make somebody an All-American and put them in the rafters next to Ed Reed and Sean Taylor unless they earn that, okay? And I remembered that there were the two games last season where Cam specifically had coverage busts that resulted in the winning scores of two of those losses last season, okay? So I come into this season, I'm looking for better, okay? He's had two games this season where he had coverage busts that resulted in losses. So, Azubi, while I'm sliding to the left over here, am I evaluating things too hard?
This is a hard one for me because I get it. He makes mistakes, but I feel like he has a magnifying glass on him because of that All-American status. And everyone on this team isn't perfect, and everyone on this team isn't going to, you know, make every perfect play every single time. It's football. No one's perfect. But I don't know. I don't critique him as hard and kind of, you know, think of it as he shouldn't be an All-American. He didn't deserve it because at the end of the day, you know, writers from across the country voted, and they all kind of unanimously believed he's an All-American, and he earned it, honestly. He's an AP All-American. And what I allude to is I can't really think of too many safeties in this country that I'd rather have playing back there than Cam Kitchens from Miami. And that's one thing, because when you first mentioned it, I did kind of think, hey, all right, he did have some mistakes and things like that. But if I really think off the top of my head, I cannot name probably two or three safeties I'd rather have playing back there over Cam Kitchens. So that's kind of the way I put it. He does – everyone makes mistakes, but he does come up with pick sixes, interceptions, and big tackles and things like that. So that's a subject for me that's kind of in the air right now.
It's a little too hit or miss for me. And I'm not saying – I mean, I like Cam Kitchens. Great kid. Good, you know, works hard. Obviously belongs as a starter on this football team. I don't remember any of the All-Americans that Miami's had in the past busting coverages that directly are leading to losing games. I don't remember ever seeing that before by somebody called an All-American in my 43 years of covering the Hurricanes. Like, I think back to Ed Reed and Sean Taylor and even the Kenny Phillipses of the world, the Brandon Merriweathers. I don't remember these guys blowing coverages, okay? And now maybe, you know, maybe I'm forgetting. I'll qualify it by saying maybe, but I don't think I am, and I don't remember it, okay? So, like, I am just evaluating what I am seeing and being honest, that's all, and keeping it real. That's what we are supposed to be doing. I'm not looking to offend anybody with any opinions. Now, that includes – wait, let me slide over. Like King Kane says, I got to slide to the right now, Azubi. All right, so now I'm over here on the right. And going to talk about Tyler Van Dyke. Okay, you got Tyler Van Dyke, true freshman Emory Williams, and sophomore Dakari Brown. Okay, there's Tim Tebow Gino Toretta, Vinny Testaverde aren't showing up on this roster, okay? So you made a decision that Tyler Van Dyke is the best quarterback on the team. Personally, based on what we have seen over time, I wholeheartedly agree with that decision, okay? I've watched Emery Williams from the time that he worked out for Frank Ponce and Mario Cristobal on a recruiting trip. I saw him that day. I said, this kid's a keeper. I hope he comes to Miami. He came to Miami. I think Emery Williams will be in the quarterback competition here for many years to come. I think he's very, very good. Is he better equipped to go to Raleigh this weekend and Tallahassee the following weekend than Tyler Van Dyke? No way, okay? This is the same Tyler Van Dyke that at North Carolina a couple weeks ago threw one of the most amazing passes with a guy billowing down on his rib cage that you'll ever see in your life. I mean, this guy can make every throw on the field. He has experience. He should be playing better than he is. And I make that the responsibility of Shannon Dawson. So I am not sitting here saying you got to replace Tyler Van Dyke because I believe he gives Miami the best chance to win these games coming up. I am saying that Shannon Dawson, who I like a lot, I love how raw he is and how honest he is, and I like his, you know, what he's done in his coaching career. I want to see him do a better job of coaching Tyler Van Dyke as Tyler Van Dyke's quarterback coach, and I want to see him do a better job on game day calling the plays to give Miami the best chance to win and taking what the defense gives them. I did not feel, Azubi, that they did that on Saturday night.
Yeah, no, I have to say that. I mean, they came away with the win, but the play calling, you know, was a little bit questionable. One thing I kind of do have to say, though, is with Cam, you kind of mentioned how, you know, his bust, you know, cost the games. But with Tyler, you can also mention that his interceptions, you know, may have cost Miami that game, too. And another thing that we kind of seem to forget a little bit, too, Cam's been banged up. He missed a couple games this year with that, you know, scary injury and things like that. But kind of going back with the Van Dyke and Dawson situation, I've kind of been on the train where it's like, hey, this is his guy. I get it. It's his third coordinator, third year and things like that. But I just feel like I haven't seen anything, you know, crazy where he's progressed to a next level or progressed to the level that people, you know, wanted him to be at. Obviously, he's 1,000% the best option for Miami moving on forward this year. You just, you know, hope he gets healthy and hope he finds a way to kind of bring back the old Tyler. As much as people always say, oh, we want to see the old Tyler, we want to see this, that, I feel like you're not going to see the old Tyler. It's different offenses, different people around him, different schemes, different a lot of things. You're going to see the Tyler Van Dyke of 2023, not the Tyler Van Dyke of 2021. So, you know, like I said, I just hope him and Dawson can get on the same page because, like you mentioned, teams know, hey, if we drop eight back in coverage and zone, it's going to be hard for him. It's going to make his life hard. It's going to be, you know, difficult for him to find his guys and make those reads and things like that. So find a way to get around that. I'm not getting paid millions of dollars to be the offense coordinator, so I don't have the complete answer. But Cam Dawson is, and if you're a high-level Power 5 offense coordinator, I feel like you need to be able to help your quarterback out and for the quarterback himself to be able to read zones and pick apart things like that. Obviously, we've seen Tyler Van Dyke can dice you up and make all the throws in man coverage, but hey, this is that next step. Find, you know, a way to beat these zones. Find something, do something to do it. But, you know, I feel like this is going to be another big test for him. If I feel like if he struggles again, you know, versus NC State and throws, you know, 2-3 interceptions against them, I feel like this is going to have a lot of people, you know, question Tyler even more. But I hope that's not the case. I hope he comes out, throws for 400 yards, 4 touchdowns, and Miami comes out with a huge win.
Well, this is his final exam these last 4 weeks of the season. If he does not come out and play better than what he's been playing the last month or so, they have to go in the portal and get the best quarterback they can get to compete with Tyler and Emery and Jakari in spring practice. They will have no choice but to do that. So this is it, man. This is a critical moment in the college football Miami Hurricanes career of Tyler Van Dyke, and it'll be interesting to see how he does. His media interviews have been canceled for the week. I think it's the third time this season this has happened. He will not be talking to the media leading up to the game. They're letting him focus on the game plan and preparing. We'll see what happens on Saturday night. 563-999-3550. 563-999-3550. Hit the 1 on your keypad if you want to come on the show. We're going now to the 904. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Hey, how you doing, Gary?
Who's this?
This is 240 from the message board.
Hey, man. How are you? Thanks.
Yeah,
thanks for calling.
I was just listening. The thing about Tyler Van Dyke, if you've watched Tyler, honestly, you know, I understand that, you know, we had a bad offensive coordinator last year, but he's the one that threw the football. I do understand that. But if you watched him for the last 2 years, it's like he needs to step away from football. I mean, I'm not saying that he do, but just his demeanor, his posture, his mannerisms, when he make these mistakes, it looks as if that he just don't care. He cares, but it's something about him that doesn't breed winner. It's something about him that doesn't breed leader. It's something about him that doesn't breed championship. And that's all any of us are saying. When you look at Kitchens is a defensive back, a safety. He's not a regular safety. Kitchens is a safety that takes chances. Now, the reason why me and you are upset with Kitchens is because in the Texas A&M game last year, he made Tyreek Stevens look like a fifth-round draft pick. Do you remember that play?
Yep.
This year, against Georgia Tech, instead of him staying back, he tried to be a hero and step in front, but we saw the receiver go right behind him. Touchdown. And so some of the decisions that he has made, he's made decisions based on him being somewhat of a ball hawk. And one of the things that he don't have, what some of these other players had, like Al Blaze Sr., was a great defensive line. One of the things about Al Blaze Sr. was not a great defensive back. People think he was. Al Blaze Sr. had a great defensive line. Some of the DBs in Miami's old defenses, they was great because of the defensive line. Cam Kitchens does not have a great defensive line. So he takes chances, but that's the type of player he is. They'll correct that in the NFL. But for right now, he's such and such, so and so. Me and you together, we are somewhat angry with him because he could have lost that game against Texas A&M, but he did lose the game to us versus Georgia Tech. But I just wanted to talk about. But I just wanted to say that. But I also wanted to say something about this particular offense. You know how you know teams are dropping seven, and we're only taking out three. To catch the football. The same thing that happened with Virginia, the same thing is going to happen with NC State this week. NC State is going to drop seven. What we need to do as an offense is flood that. And what I mean by that, we need to start sending out that tight end. We need to start sending out that running back. And we need to see, this is what we need to see this Saturday, Gary. We need to see, can our offensive line block man for man? Not running the football. But when we throw the football, can our offensive line block a man for man without that tight end having to stay in and do max protection? If we have to max protect again this week, the way we've had to do in the last, three or four weeks, this is going to be a tough game because that exotic 3-4, 3-3 stack that they run, you don't know where the pressure is coming from. You just don't know. And Tyler Van Dyke, he has to give Kobe Young an opportunity. He's got to. One of the things that Emory did do is that he gave Kobe Young an opportunity. And the opportunities that he gave Kobe Young caught the football. Yes, he did drop one. But Tyler Van Dyke got to give Kobe Young opportunities. I'm going to tell you, Isaiah Hort as well. He's 6'3", 6'4". We got to get these taller receivers an opportunity. One, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to end my gear. One of the things that we learn and see about Florida State is that they give their big boys opportunities, these 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", receivers opportunities. And I'm going to tell you something, number 22, our cornerback, they're going to get a lot of opportunities. You said something of that sort last week. What you going to do about when you play certain teams with these big DBs? Because you know just as well as I know and anybody else, that they take advantage of short defensive backs. Why don't Miami do the same thing?
Ma'am.
And so we'll see. And it's like I'm saying, I understand your frustration with number five. But then again, you do kind of call him the quarterback in a sense. You call him a little bit because you know that's all we got right now. So since you know that's all
we got. Yeah, I don't think that there's a better option. If I did, I would be
happy.
Yeah, if I thought there was a better option, trust me, I would not be bashful to say it.
No, we don't have it because one of the things about Emory is that defensive coordinators get paid this kind of money to pick up on what he do. So what they'll make him do is that keep letting him dump underneath and just come make the tackle. They would do different. They would not give him a one-on-one. Emory, they would make him deep and dump. And hopefully that, you know, when they run the football, they can put it in the box. They do the same thing. But I do understand everybody's frustration with this particular football team. But I want to see Saturday, can we block man for man and flood the zone? Because they're going to drop seven. They're going to drop eight. So we need to send out a tight end, and we need to send that running back out so that we can flood the zone or five wide. But we need to flood these particular zones because they're only going to rush three or four. If we don't learn how to flood these zones, so that we can find more men open, it's going to be a long night for the University of Miami. Thank you.
All right, man. Thank you for being part of the show. You know, I got to admit it, Zuby. I see some of what he's talking about with the demeanor. There are times that Tyler Van Dyke looks a little defeated out there, and I thought about that a lot too. And, you know, to me, he has not been the same guy ever since he got into the world of agents and NIL, and you know, I think that getting an agent so soon and the focal point being in 2022, having a good year and going to the National Football League early, I think that played with his head. And I think that not having a good year last year and not being able to fulfill that plan, I honestly think it played with his psyche a little bit. And now he's coming back this year with the same plan, and it's not working out again. And, like, I wonder if that's got something to do with a lot of what we see, and if that makes him feel a little defeated, Azubi.
Yeah, no, that's something that you have been mentioning kind of ever since the year started, even before when he was doing good. But I don't know, that's just something that, you have to. That's when you man up and say, "Hey, this is my make or break." You know, they say pressure makes diamonds, or you can fold. And you know, as of late, this last few games, he's folding under this pressure. And obviously, no one wants to see, you know, Tyler Van Dyke be down, be throwing interceptions, you know, be on the bench with his head down and things like that. But at once, you just gotta, you know, get your chin checked. You know, get knocked down. It's how you respond. You know, he's knocked down right now. It looks like he might be out for the count if another big, you know, hit comes. I'm using kind of boxing analogies. Now it's time for him to get up. He said, "Hey, I still have it in me. I still can perform at a high level." And you know, what better way to do it than on the road against a decent NC State team that's coming off, you know, a big win against Clemson, and come out and prove their doubters wrong? What other way to, you know, bounce back and prove yourself wrong and then prove everyone else that's been doubting you wrong? So whether it's psyche, injuries, or you know, even something else we don't know behind the scenes. Obviously, everyone wants to see Tyler Van Dyke succeed. Everyone wants to see him be the best quarterback he can be for Miami. But I feel like it's something he has to kind of, you know, figure out himself, and then that'll translate on the field. Because, you know, like a lot of people mentioned, the demeanor, the not talking to the media for the last 3 weeks, all that stuff kind of plays into it. And it's just an odd case that a lot of people don't know what could be, you know, fully behind the scenes. So going to be very interested to see how this game, you know, versus NC State goes.
Yeah, does he feel like he's letting people down? Looks like that to me. All right, 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. You hit the 1 on your keypad if you want to come on the show. And I know this, he needs a big game at NC State on Saturday to get his confidence rocking going to face the Seminoles in Tallahassee, where the Canes absolutely must find a way to derail that undefeated season that they got cooking up there in the state capital. And they need Tyler Van Dyke at his best to be able to do that. Let's go now to the 917. You're live on Canesport Live.
Hey, what's up, Gary? BK or K?
What's up, BK? How you doing this week?
I'm doing okay. Last week, right, I mentioned the whole Tyler Van Dyke thing, how he's never looked the same since 2021. And I said, regardless of what he decides, they still have to go after the best available quarterback, period. Now, it seems that that's the sentiment now, that, you know, there's something going on with Tyler. Maybe there isn't anything going on with Tyler, and defenses have figured him out. They figured out that he has a weakness, and they're playing on it. They said, listen, we're going to rattle this guy. We're going to take away his first read, and then he's stuck. And then he's stuck. He's just stuck. If the first read isn't there, he's just looking around, and he forces plays, and he's not hitting the tight ends. I don't even think we got tight ends, but – and he's not hitting the backs coming out of the backfield. So I say that. Hopefully, Highsmith is getting his money's worth, and he's looking for that quarterback, because we're going to have to open the wallet for that guy, regardless. Even if he goes out and wins the next three or four games, we can't risk having another season like this next year with that easy schedule that we got in front of us next year.
Well, I think first you got to see how the season ends. If he plays well the last four games, then he's going to be the quarterback going into next year. If he doesn't play well the last four games, they absolutely going to have to go look in the portal. But until you see what is in the portal, it's hard to have an opinion on that, quite honestly. And then the other big question in December is going to be, is Ja'Kari Brown going to stick it out and compete in spring practice?
Well, Gary, the quarterbacks are there every year in the portal. Every single year they're there. That's what history dictates. There's going to be a couple in the portal. Is Miami going to go get them? All this season has proven, and the history of Tyler Van Dyke has proven, that he's just an above-average college quarterback. An above-average college quarterback is not taking us to where we need to go.
Yeah, well,
this is a quarterback.
Okay, though, a lot's going to depend on who's there, and then are you willing to make a commitment to them to be the starter? Because if there's somebody really good there, unless you tell them they're going to be the starter, they're probably not coming. I don't care how much NIL money you offer them.
Well, maybe we're going to have to pull that trigger. Don't you think we had enough of a sample size of Tyler Van Dyke?
Even that would finish well, yes.
Tell a guy, hey, listen, you could come here and start?
Yes. If the season does not end well, then I think they have to make that call. No, if that dude is there, and I don't know who that dude is at this point, but if that dude is really there, you got to make that call, man. If this season doesn't end well,
yeah. Well,
look,
I think regardless,
we have to. Here's how I look at it. Okay, the offensive line is massively better, right? The running back position is drastically better, right?
Drastically.
Okay. The wide receivers, to me, are drastically better. And then the numbers, as struggling as the passing game has been, those receivers already have the numbers to show that they are drastically better.
Well, didn't Matt Shadell say earlier, I think he said it today, that the numbers aren't that different from the wide receivers from last year? So I'm not
they're
sure
not,
they're drastically better.
They're not, but individually, those three guys are performing at a better level than they ever have. Okay, let's put it that way. Would you agree that Colby Young,
yes,
Xavier,
yes,
Restrepo, and Ja'Kobe George, we are seeing the best version of those guys right now that we have ever seen, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so that's offensive line, running backs, wide receivers, okay? Where are we lacking? We're lacking a tight end. We're getting no production out of the tight end position at all. And I'm not blaming those guys. They're just not seeing the football. And the quarterback has been shaky. So, like, if you're looking at that objectively, if this quarterback doesn't get his act together here these last four or five games of the year, then you're right. You must look in the portal for that dude.
Correct.
Yeah. So what else, BK?
All right.
Now that we've solved that problem, Let's move on to the next one.
If you had to choose, right, if you had to choose, you got Cam Kitchens and James Williams or Jaquan Johnson or Sheldrick Redwine, who would you take?
Wow.
James Williams and Cam isn't looking that good all of a sudden, right?
Yeah, those two, Jaquan and Redwine were pretty solid back there.
Solid.
Man,
they didn't make
boneheaded
mistakes.
No, they did not. Not like this. And I get it. Like, people are willing to look past them. And I think James Williams has been pretty good this year. But, like for whatever reason,
yes.
People want to look past the mistakes. I'll take the heat. You want to yell at me for objectively evaluating what I see from number five? Then get mad at me. Like, I see a guy that I feel has directly contributed to blowing four games in the last two seasons because he does not always fulfill the responsibilities that he is supposed to fulfill. That's just what I see with my own eyes.
All the talent is there except for the discipline. You never, ever caught Sheldrick Redwine or Jaquan Johnson out of position making boneheaded plays like these guys have been doing for the last –
I don't remember them doing that, BK. I agree with you.
I don't remember it either. But last thing, this is just a suggestion. Listen, do you think you could have a Where Are They Now segment of some of the old Canes, like some of the more recent Canes, like around 2000 and up?
Yeah, maybe in the off season we'll do that.
Yeah, in the off season that'd be good because I always wonder whatever happened to some of these guys that like.
Yeah, we've done that from time to time. We've got our resident historian, Jim March, that we put on that case. He loves doing those. So yeah, maybe we'll get into some of that during the offseason.
All right, that's it, Gary. Thanks a lot. Keep me on.
Yep, BK, thank you for being part of the show. 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. You hit the 1 on your keypad if you want to come on the show. We are going now to the 786. You are live on Kane Sport Live. Seven, eight, six, you with us?
Gary.
That's you, man.
Gary, how are
What's
you?
Up? What's up, everything? How you doing this week?
Nothing much. Azubi, how are you doing, Azubi?
I'm doing good, everything. Good to hear you again.
Good to hear you guys. Well, you know, you've had a great show so far. Had some great opinions, some interesting perspectives. Haven't heard a lot of facts. I've
heard a lot of data. I knew there had to be a butt coming there, everything from you.
Well, you know, hey, we just have to make sure that we give – if we're going to go ahead and have this conversation, let's be fair across the board. All right. Number one, when you look at what Tyler Van Dyke has been able to do since his freshman year, he's taken advantage of some great opportunities. However, it got a little bit harder, and Florida State in 21 said, let's go ahead and see if this kid can throw the ball in tight windows. And that was not a very good game. I think our tight end did pretty decent that game. We ran the ball pretty decently as well. But if you look at that game, that was the first major tell on how to beat this kid. When you change offensive coordinators, we go ahead and we now – our second offensive coordinator, we're going from Rhett Lashley to Josh Gattis last year, and we're not a nurturer because Josh is not a nurturer. He's more cut from the old cloth of being an adamant and pretty much a diligent person with the way he interacts with these kids. He's very demanding. He's not the friendliest guy around. It's almost like he's got a persona that's better for the NFL. I mean, that's what I've heard, that's what I've seen, but whatever. So that doesn't go well. And then we get hurt, and the only thing that happened last year is every time he faced a defense that was primarily man, that gave him man looks, he was able to, like the game against North Carolina last year here at Hard Rock, he was able to get some numbers up. And that's been the same thing we've seen since the end of his freshman year. Doesn't do well against any type of teams that are pretty much just trying to go ahead and force you to put the ball in a very tight spot. He just doesn't do well. Hasn't done well. He gets stuck on one guy in Restrepo, who's, if I'm not mistaken, the leading receiver we have this year. And in terms of the number of targets the last 2 years, he's still the number one guy at that as well. So when you start adding all these things up, you pretty much come to the conclusion that he just struggles against these type of schemes. If it's a man, it's a lot easier for him. Now, you've got to be fair with this kid. And I think, Gary, that's what you're trying to do, is you're trying to be fair. Yeah, he took a beating. And no doubt, if he was at 70% last weekend, that's kind of high. But he still gives you the best chance to win games. You also have to take some credit in terms of, or direct some of the blame, rather, to your offensive coordinator. This gentleman that's been breaking down games for the last 10 years, I think, and Roman Kane. And if you look at his YouTube channel, you'll see a bunch of things that are no longer being done with running backs. And you keep mentioning the flat. Well, you know, pretty much nobody comes and I shoot the gap and turn around, you know, go straight ahead. I'm going to be wide open. That linebacker has to make a decision and open a window. We haven't seen RPO, which does what? Gets the zone. Forces the linebacker to make a decision. Windows get bigger. We don't see much tight end in corporation. Again, we can go on and on and on. Everybody has some ownership here. Something's definitely wrong with this kid, yeah, but he hasn't gotten better. Okay, he's the same kid he was his redshirt freshman year, Gary. And I think that's what Kane King is trying to convey to you guys, is that you're real quick to point out, you know, the scorecard on any other kid. But so far, when it comes to Tyler, you know, some people say you haven't. In my opinion,
we've broken down Tyler more than anybody. I mean, we did a story 2 days ago on showing every single one of his interceptions and breaking them down.
And I think you just have to be fair, but you also have to recognize. I mean, you know, you and I differed about this 2 weeks ago, and I told you, in my opinion, Cam's a second-round draft pick. And you're like, man, I don't see that. I don't even think you said he's a fourth-round pick. And there was something to that extent. And I said one thing that maybe you still, I don't think, are totally appreciating here. Playmakers gamble, and playmakers sometimes gamble and fail. You want to look at some tape about, you know, who's in the what banners are up there in the indoor field house we have? I can give you two games that Ed Reed lost, and one was against Penn State. It happens. It's part of the game. He wasn't there to go ahead and help the saw off the wide receiver for Penn State. I'll never forget that game. And he was a redshirt sophomore. And Cam's a true junior. Same freaking thing. Playmakers are going to make those mistakes. Does he seem to gamble too much? Yes. Is his discipline, like BK was just mentioning, is it where it needs to be? It's not. But guys like that, when you do the final eval, Gary, the pros are going to outweigh the cons. The good is going to outweigh the bad, and he's going to have a good number, and it's going to help you win a game. And when you look at the two games that we're saying that he lost, that will help win four of the games. But right now he's a plus two.
It's not good enough, everything. I'm sorry.
But you're forgetting one major thing, which you're quick to point out. This kid in game two of the year, you know, we didn't even know if this kid was paralyzed or not. So you forgot that part. That part hasn't been mentioned by anybody. And when you go through that, do you think you're the same guy? You're not the same guy. And he's got a bad ankle. Now, I'm not telling you. I'm not going to say the person's name that played at the University of Miami that has family members at the University of Miami right now. I'm not going to say that name. And he is in the educational world. But I'm going to tell you that me and him both agree he's not your best pass defender. But in terms of the type of position he's going to play at the next level, he's a much better defender than Jaquan Johnson is right now or will ever be in the NFL. You know? And those are the little things that I'm trying to piece together here just to give you the flip side. None of them are going to be perfect. They're all going to make their mistakes. But special talent, special kids make special plays. Talented kids like James Williams are still trying to figure things out. But damn it, they're so freakish And now they've bought into playing a different role, kind of. And now we're having success. You know, now you're starting to see him, for example, evolve. Now his talent is going to dictate a general manager in the NFL to take him before Cameron Kitchens right now. That I promise you. They both came out for this year's draft. James is going first over Cam. This is. But they still have major value. And that's what I wanted to point out. As a whole, you know, you win together, you lose together, and that comes from coaching, players, commitment. There's 17 to 24-year-olds for a reason, Gary. And that should tell you the bottom line.
So, I'll ask your question. You used to coach, right?
Yeah, I'm retired. Yeah, I've been retired for a good 11 years.
But not football, other sports, right?
No, other sports, yeah, men's basketball particularly. Yeah.
All right, but from a coaching mindset, do you go into Raleigh on Saturday night with a short leash on the quarterback? Like, if he starts struggling again in this game, do you yank him?
I can't. Can't do that.
I don't think so either.
I mean, you can't.
Because now you got a quarterback controversy or issue or, you know, whatever you want to call it, and you're subjecting yourself to having to go back and forth.
Well, not only that, Gary, you're looking at a retro freshman and a true freshman that will have to play. As much as I love the panhandle pistol kid, which as Larry Bluestein has named him the panhandle pistol, whatever he calls him, it's a great nickname, but that kid's not ready in that environment to be a Doe Campbell and come out there with a win. He's just not ready for that. Is he ready to go ahead and go into Raleigh and get a win? He's not ready for that. You know, is the court? He's not ready. He's not accurate enough a passer. Now, can we go ahead and lighten Tyler's load? Yeah, there's a lot of things you can do in the run game.
Correct. I agree.
21 personnel. There's a bunch of things you can freaking do. And
more screen passes, more pass in the flat to the tight ends. This is not all on Tyler. This is not all on Tyler. And I liked when Shannon Dawson said Monday that Shannon Dawson, I can't remember if he used the word partnership, but he took ownership for his share of this problem.
Yeah, he did.
So I give him credit for that.
He definitely did.
Yeah.
He definitely did. But, you know, Gary, before I leave here, I just want to point out there's a lot that needs to happen here. I mean, they really have to come together. They're short. They're beat up. They're banged up. Their depth isn't where it needs to be. Guys like Lichtenstein have to pick it up. Everybody's got to go ahead and contribute. But if you're good enough at having the kids buy into the message and you simplify things a little bit and you just execute whatever the hell it is that you're trying to run, you give yourself a chance to win. And that means, in my opinion, it means 60-40 running over throwing right now. And that's going to ease a lot of things. If you look at two of the best pass plays he had last week, they were in 22-step personnel. Just two wide receivers. I mean, that's pretty obvious. And 21 personnel, with two wide receivers. That was pretty obvious. And he brought in an offensive lineman as a tight end. I think you need to get back to more of that stuff. And you've got depth there. You've got some strength there. And you've got that line is really gelling well. I would really go ahead and put everything into a strong run game. And get some RPO out of there, and just make it a little bit easier for them, like you're mentioning with the bubble screens and things like that. You got to make it easier for them. Get that ball to his hands as quick as you can, and I think we'll have a chance to win. Defensively, they're a good team. They put a lot of pressure, but if I'm them, I'm not doing what Dabo did or everybody else did. I'm doing what coach at Georgia Tech did. Said, hey, let's keep it simple. And remind you, that was a brand new coordinator that did that. And he just went to the basics. What doesn't this guy like to do? Do it as much as you can, see what happens.
Yeah. All right, everything.
Gary, I appreciate your time as always.
Thank you for being part of the show, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care. Be well. Go Canes.
You got it. Let's go to the 706. You're on Canes Sport Live.
Hey, Gary. Zuby, how you guys doing this evening? This is boy Sebastian.
What's up, Sebastian?
What's up, Sebastian?
Hey, man. Hey, Gary. You know, you've been taking a lot of heat today, but you said something that was very, very profound. And it's been up what I've been saying for the last couple of weeks. You said this is really a 7-1 ball team.
I have to look at it that way. People yell at me, but I don't – like, we're evaluating, and I don't – I mean, we're all evaluating, essentially, and it's like, how do you look at it any other way? I mean, they played like crap, but they had the game won.
Yeah. You know, I said a couple of weeks ago, I said, are we more of a 5-1 team? Are we a 4-2 team? You know, look. Last year we're 5-7. This year, after 8 games, we're 6-2. This year, last year, I think we were sitting at 3-5. Correct me if I'm wrong. All of the metrics are positive. I think everyone would universally agree we're a better football team than we were last year. And we have 4 games the remainder of the season. We can go 0-4. We could go 1-3, 2-2, 3-1, or 4-0. You know, if I had to define success when the season is over, if we win 3 of these next 4 ball games, I think it was a pretty good year. Would you guys agree or disagree with that?
That is Zuby.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with it. That's what I had Miami's final at the end of the year after the regular season, 9-3. I think that is, you know, what Miami should be at with talent-wise, with roster-wise, with just looking at the remainder of the schedule. I think Miami should and could be 9-3 at the end of the year. I wouldn't call it a perfect year because a perfect year is obviously, you know, going undefeated and winning a national championship, but I feel like that's the most realistic and attainable goal that Miami, you know, could achieve, and I think they will achieve it, you know, when it comes down to it.
You know, the way I look at this football team is I wonder when do we get to the place where we just are willing to accept incremental growth. You know, when I look at the last time we won a national championship back in 2001, 2002, I remember there was a period we went 5-7, and then we started winning, but we were winning ugly. I remember a game at Boston College. We were down 28-0, and we found a way to come back and win that game. I remember we were able to upset the number one team in the nation at that time, UCLA. And I remember what that game was like, with shootout, with turnovers, and busted coverage and plays and stuff like that. I'm just saying, as I look at this team, I'm just trying to – you go ahead, Gary. I'm just trying to be realistic in relations to, like, when can we accept growth? I think the head coach is learning on the fly. I think the coordinator is learning on the fly. I think the team is learning how to play together. And we're learning how to win. It may not be easy. It may be ugly at times. We're learning how to win. Now, there are some things that we can control that I kind of feel like on the margins, we have to do a better job because some of these games are going to be very, very tough. I think number one, and I think everybody's giving you a lot of flack about this tonight, is I think we've come to the conclusion that Tyler gives us our best chance to win. I just don't think we have to put the whole entire game on Tyler's shoulder. Would you guys agree or disagree on that?
I agree. I agree.
Yeah, 100%.
Give him some easier throws, man. Like, yeah, give him some easier stuff.
You know, I mean, just going to the game, saying to myself, I'm just going to – try to minimize how much pressure I'm going to try to put on him. Like, you know, we have a big game against NC State. And if I win it by 1 point, 2 point, last second field goal, I'll take it because we're looking at a 7-2 Miami going to play an undefeated Florida State team. And when we play Florida State, I just don't think we need to play them with the shootout. I think we need to try to run the ball, control the game. And all I want to see for the next 2 weeks is I just want to see us have a team that we could get into the game in the fourth quarter. For the last couple of games, we got it in the fourth quarter, and it was tight. We won. And I just think that's what we need to shoot for. I just don't think we have the team that's built yet that's just going to blow everybody out of water. I don't think that we have that from a roster perspective. I don't think we have that from a depth perspective. I don't think we have that from a talent perspective. We're just not there yet, guys.
Now, no argument, man.
There's a couple things I want to talk about because I think this is more of a positive story. Number one is how great has the offensive line been this year? I mean, we're finishing games when they said that we had no pressures, no sacks. The quarterback hasn't even been touched. I just think that's just a phenomenal story compared to how horrible we were. Who's the kid number 73 that we got very, very late from Alabama who's been like a full-time starter this year? Kind of like Jalen Rivers I talked about last year. We don't even talk about him. We don't say nothing about him. And I just think all he does is go out there and does his job, open up holes. I don't think we've seen him get called. Correct me if I'm wrong, Zuby. I don't think we've seen a holding penalty on him. I don't think we've seen like a false start on him. I don't recall any penalties on him. Nobody talked about him.
Yeah, no, he's been handling his business and that moving on. You know, the whole offensive line has kind of been, you know, doing that. Obviously, Francis has had his little freshman blunders, but besides that, the offensive line has been as solid as can be, which you love to see.
Okay, I appreciate that. Hey, I want y'all to talk a little bit about recruiting on the defensive tackle, but I don't want to monopolize everybody's time. But if you guys could comment on this, over the next four games, what is it going to take for us to come be victorious over the next four games? You know what our opponents are. We got a Boston College team. We got to play after Thanksgiving where it's going to be cold, probably going to be snowing. We got a Florida State team that we're going to be playing at night, more than likely sold out. The crowd is going to be against us. We got a Louisville team that's going to come to Hard Rock, who's fast, whose offense is clicking on all cylinders. And then we got the game next week that's going to be up in Raleigh where we have probably the biggest game that we're going to have this year that we're going to say is probably the best linebackers in the whole entire conference. So if you can just go over our next four games, what is it going to take for us to win? What are your realistic expectations and what is acceptable? 1-3, 2-2, 3-1, 4-0. I want to hear from you. Just keep me on hold.
All right. Well, let's start with this week. I think you got to come out and you got to be able to move the football and score points. This is going to be a tough game. It's going to go down into the fourth quarter, and you know you're going to have to get the offense passing game working as well as the running game's been working because you know NC State knows you've been running the ball well. They're going to be geared up to take the run away, and they know TVD's been struggling. And they know you got a freshman quarterback behind TVD, and they're going to be looking to make him struggle again. And they would love if you switch quarterbacks. You know, they're not going to be fearing switching quarterbacks. It makes it easier for them to defend the field. So you got to be better, and you got to hope that this week in practice that they have been becoming better this week. Florida State, I mean, that's going to take everything. I mean, you're talking about going up there, playing up there. They got it all going. But here's what I'm going to say. They are going to be feeling a lot of pressure in that game because they're going to be 9-0. They're going to be looking at an undefeated season. They're going to be thinking about playoffs. And their number is going to be up, okay? Because how many teams in college football every year go undefeated, okay? So, you know, their number is going to be up. They are going to be under an enormous amount of pressure in that game because Miami is good enough to beat them if Miami plays well. And you got to go up there with a great game plan and execute. Same deal. Got to be able to run them and throw the ball. Home against Louisville. My God, man, whoever thought. But Louisville is playing really good football right now. And same deal as Florida State to me. You got to be really good, and you should be. You should be at your best, right, Azubi, at this point of the season? I mean, you should be playing your best football. And Miami out there playing its best football should be able to win two of these four games.
Yeah, no, I think kind of starting from the start or the beginning of the question, if I had to pick two or three things, I think would be key for all four of those matchups. First one would be you have to stop getting behind in a hole or getting behind, you know, these 10-point deficits. We saw a 10-point deficit versus Clemson. We saw a 10-point deficit versus Virginia. Versus these next three or four teams, you find yourself in a hole like that, I don't think you're digging yourself, you know, out of it and coming away with overtime. I just think the talent level for the next three or four teams is just too high for that. The second thing I would have to say is just turnovers. That has just been killer, honestly. Obviously, they kind of, you know, did better against Clemson, but you still have the turnovers against Virginia. You still have the turnovers in your other losses that really have been big in the season. And my last thing would just be defense, downtown defense. You obviously, they've done a good job of kind of getting to the red zone and not giving up seven instead of three, but just making that one tackle, making that tackle in open space, not letting them, you know, extend the drive on a third and medium or a third and long or things like that. But, you know, I feel like my projection is going to be 3-1 over these next four games. I don't know, for some reason, I feel good about it, but at the same time, I just think Miami's going to drop one of them. I don't know who it is. Obviously, Florida State's the easy answer, but like you mentioned, Gary, that's going to be a huge, huge game. A lot of pressure on Florida State. Everyone's, you know, expecting you to come out and beat this team by 40 like you did last year. A lot of chit-chat between the guys. That game's kind of have a weird feeling right now. And like you mentioned, you know, Miami is talented enough to beat those guys. And I feel like Miami has enough talent to beat everyone on their schedule remaining. But kind of those three things would be my keys. Do not fall behind in early holes. Come out strong. The turnovers and play sound defense. I think Miami can, you know, finish this year with 9 wins or, you know, maybe 10 if all things go correctly.
Start fast. And again, that's the game plan. That's game planning. Okay? Start fast. Get out of the gates. Build confidence. Let's go to the 904. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Hey, Gary. How you doing?
Doing great. Who's this?
This is Sean. I don't call the show much, but I'm a fan.
No. Glad you called, man. Talk to us.
Well, I had a few things I wanted to talk about. I guess the big thing is regarding Shannon Dawson and Tyler Van Dyke. And I agree, Tyler Van Dyke, you know, has not been playing well. But I've been listening to you, and I think you're right about Dawson. And he's not doing very well. And one of the things I wanted to ask you is, does it come off like he's arrogant and, you know, like I watch his
conferences. No, he's a good dude, man. He's not arrogant at all. He's a good dude. It's his first year here. He's learning his personnel on the fly, let's be honest. Because, you know, spring practice, fall practice are all great, whatever. You don't really get to know your players till you get into games. And he's not getting consistency of performance either. And I'm not making excuses for him because – I don't think he's done so great in a couple of these games. I didn't think he was very good against Georgia Tech. I didn't think he was very good against Virginia the other day. So he's not batting 8-for-8 so far this season. But, I mean, I think he's a good offensive coordinator. But he's got to learn. He's learning TVD, and he's learning some of the issues that TVD can have. And he's got to coach him, and I think TVD needed better coaching in a couple of these games.
Yeah, I'm not questioning whether or not he's not a good offensive coordinator. I guess my issue with him is he appears to think like he's got this great offensive system that has worked at like Power Five great schools, and this is really his first big time job. I mean, this is his first go, you know, at a major program. So I guess, just when I listen to him in the press conferences, it's like he's coming off like he's like had these record-setting offenses before, and then, I don't know. It just seems like he's a little arrogant. But the other thing I wanted to talk about is the future of the quarterback position. So, and I know you've spent a lot of this show talking about it, but I'm a little concerned if TBD does. I don't think he'll be our quarterback next year. So that kind of leaves us in a bind, right? You have Emory Williams. You have if Ja'Cory Brown stays, right, and then you have this true freshman. And I guess my concern mainly is with the recruiting of quarterbacks these past few cycles. I don't think it's been up to the level it needs to be. I mean, we're getting 3 stars, and I know they're developmental.
Oh, Emory's pretty good now. Emery's good. Emery is already pretty good, and he's going to be better.
But is Emery the – I mean, is he –
is he good, like, that dude? Like, we don't know that yet, for starters. But I would agree that they need to – they're going to – if Tyler Van Dyke does not shine these last four games and show he's figured it out, they have to go in the portal and get the best quarterback they can get, even if that means Tyler Van Dyke goes in the portal too.
Right. I'm just a little concerned about the future of the position as it relates to recruiting and how we recruited the position.
Sean, I would say don't be. I would say don't be concerned because of the portal. All the top teams go in the portal and get quarterback. You know, it's not. You know, we saw Oklahoma got Jalen Hurts. We Ohio State got Justin Fields. Like, quarterbacks go in the portal. Bo Nix at Oregon started at Auburn. It's kind of like almost standard operating procedure these days.
Right. All right. The one of the last things I wanted to ask you about is this total unwillingness to use the tight end. And I know if you look at his history, Dawson's history and his offense, he doesn't use the tight end much. But it's almost becoming like we're playing with 10 players on the field. Like it's really weird. And I don't understand
it. It's very weird. When you consider how hard Miami recruits tight ends and calls itself Tight End U and went out and got Riley Williams and Jackson Carver. Arroyo's been hurt and, can't do anything about that. They went out and got Skinner, who's been a disappointment because he refuses to work at becoming a great blocker too. And he'll probably be in the portal. But they work very hard at recruiting tight ends. And tight ends have been very successful here. And you're totally right. Absolutely invisible this whole season.
I mean, yeah, it's just and I know there was this story about this the commit we have, and I know it's reported that you reported that it wasn't true, but it does make you wonder, like, okay, what do the guys on our current roster feel like? Maybe they hit the portal. Like the last thing we would need is for an Arroyo, and then it's like, wow, we don't have any tight ends, So yeah, I just wanted to say that it is very strange that we don't use the tight end at all. And then I'll just wrap up. I'll get out of here on this. But I just wanted to hear maybe Zuby. I appreciate all the work you do, Zuby. Whether or not there's any news on defensive tackle recruitment or where we're pivoting there. I saw something today on Twitter that Blunt, we're still working on Blunt. But I don't know if you guys had any information on that.
I'll let Zuby answer, but I will tell you this. We went out to talk to Blunt today, and face-to-face, he told us he's not even talking to Miami. So I don't know about the rumors on Twitter. I don't know what's going on. But Blunt told us today he has not been engaged with Miami at all. So
yeah, just kind of going off that note. That defensive, tackle position, that's been one that's, kind of been interesting as of late. Obviously, with the Blunt situation, then Artavius Jones being kind of the only guy in the trenches or at the defensive tackle position, recruiting, obviously he's still committed to Miami, but we've heard a lot of things about him flirting with Tallahassee. Obviously nothing has popped yet, but I think that's going to have to be a portal position, because if you look across the board with the top kind of 2024 guys, there's pretty much not anyone left on the board. So I think Miami's going to have to hit the portal and kind of land a guy, at that defensive tackle position. And obviously you have, Horton still in, the system right now as a true freshman, but we haven't seen him much. But From recruiting high school standpoint, it's kind of dry right now. There's not much, left out there unless Miami kind of tries to flip one of the big guys that they were, pursuing previously, or they go for, a three-star guy with, high upside that, at a lower level team and try to flip him like that. But it's looking like they're going to have to jump in the portal to get a solid defensive tackle.
Gotcha. All right, well, that's all I wanted to ask. Thanks again for the great show, Gary and Zuby. I'll hopefully call in soon. Thank you.
All right, Sean, thank you for being part of the show. 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. You hit the 1 on your keypad if you would like to come on the show. We're going now to the 386. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Good evening, Gary.
Who's this?
It's Will. Good evening to you and to Zuby. Appreciate you taking my call.
What is going on, Will?
I'm going to say, hey, You believing now, Gary?
Believe in what?
I say, do you believe me now?
Yeah, about what? Remind me.
I've been participating in your show, on your show, for the past 5 or 6 years.
Yes,
and I've been saying the same thing every year. Every year, Gary Azubi, it seems like it's always something wrong at the University of Miami. They just cannot put it all together. You can go back to Randy Shannon tenure, fast forward now. Last year at this time, everybody, including me, I'm including myself, wanted the offensive coordinator fired. Offensive coordinator left, brought in a different offensive coordinator. Now it's the quarterback and the passing game that's the problem. I wish we could fast forward next year this time to see what the problem going to be next year. Every year at the – look, let me finish. Look. We need an offensive coordinator 1 year, then we need a defensive coordinator, then we need a head coach, then we need linebackers, we need offensive linemen, we need quarterback. It's always something going on at the University of Miami. They just cannot put it all together. Why?
What do you think, Azubi? I don't have the answer.
That's another million-dollar question. I mean, I feel like that's just the season. It does it to you. Every year there's a new problem. You know, you never know what it is. Like you said, every year there's something different. I feel like, obviously, you know, every college program goes through something, loses somebody, but you feel like with Miami, it's always magnified to a greater extent because it's Miami, and people always expect, you know, Miami used to be this perfect dominant team where every single player got drafted and all this good stuff. So if one small thing happens, I feel like you get blown 10 times worse and things like that. That's just coming from me looking from the outside in, you know, and then working for Miami or working covering Miami the past 2 years. But that is a million-dollar question that, you know, one day we'll have the answer to, but I don't think today's that day.
Gary, I asked the question last week. I'm not sure it got answered. Do Mario Cristobal need someone on his staff that's been a head coach before?
Nick Saban does it. You know, he brings in head coaches that are out of work and are, you know, are retired, you know, semi-retired, whatever, and utilizes them in different ways as analysts. I don't think it would hurt a thing, man. Like, I would have loved to see somebody up in the booth last week yelling and screaming about the flats being wide open, for example. You know, somebody that's got the respect of the coordinator or the head coach or whatever that, you know, like for example, Rob Chudzinski, okay? He plays that role up at Boston College. You know, kind of like an eye in the sky kind of guy. That's a perfect example. A guy that was an offense coordinator for 20, 25 years, that was a head coach in the National Football League, rose to be, you know, was a great coordinator for football, but actually rose to be a head coach in the National Football League. It only lasted a year. But the point is, you know, somebody like that, like a Rob Chudzinski, a Mark Trestman, somebody who's been around for a long time that can see things that can help you win games. I think that would be great if they went in that direction.
Last point I'm going to touch on here. This is a thing that is non-existent at the University of Miami. I got two players here. It's a whole list of them, but I'm only going to point to two. Chase Smith, Brian Balam. I mean, why don't at the University of Miami, why don't you bring all these big-time great athletes in there? If they're not working out at one position, why not move them to another position or at least take a look at them? I mean, Chase Smith, this guy's 6'3", 220, 225. Why not put 15, 20 pounds on him, move him to defensive end? Hey, you might have an outstanding third-down pass rusher. Brian Balam, 6 feet, a little over 200, 6'1", maybe. Why not make him put weight on him and make him an outside linebacker, somebody that can cover and tackle in space, maybe come on a blitz like a missile? I mean, when was the last time Miami moved someone to a different position and it took off? You don't even see that anymore. If these guys are not working out at one position, the answer is to go transfer. Why don't they take a look at these guys at other positions? You don't even see that at Miami anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say about those guys because, well, Chase Smith was hurt for a while, but he played a little bit early, and it looked like he was making strides, but then he's just disappeared again. Brian Ballum's a kid. He's been a backup player that they talked him out of going to the portal to be a back 50, and, I mean, is not impacting very much at all. So I would expect both those guys to be in the portal at the end of the year.
All right, well, appreciate you taking my call.
I'd have to double-check that, but I'd expect both to be in the portal. All right, man, thank you for being part of the show, Will.
Hey, if you can, fast forward to next year. I want to see what the problem going to be next year.
November 1st. November 1st, next year, if that's a Tuesday, whatever that Tuesday is, Will, we're going to be talking on this show, and I guarantee you there will be something.
Thank you for taking my call.
All right, well, he makes a great point, Azubi. There's always something, man. Always something. It's crazy. All right, 563-999-3550. 563-999-3550. Hit 1 on your keypad if you'd like to come on the show. Let's go 727 now. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Hey, Gary. It's Jake from St. Pete. How you doing?
What's up, Jake? How you doing this week?
Pretty good, pretty good. Actually, I'm checking in from Salt Lake City this week. I missed you last week. We were in transit.
Right, so you told us you were moving. You're out there with the Mormons.
Yep, so. Yeah, no, enjoying some mountain views here. It's pretty nice. But I'm going to answer the last caller's question and piggyback off of something you brought up earlier. But when he wants to ask why Miami can't get its act together, I'm going to point straight to Drew Rosenhaus and all these agents. They're whispering sweet nothings in these guys' ears, and I think, personally, it destroyed Tyler Van Dyke. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if you could add Cam Kinsey's to that, the way he, you know, I mean, he's a really good player. He's not great, but a lot of it's, you know, he's trying to make highlight real plays, and he makes bonehead mistakes doing it. And, he's trying to jump routes, get the pick six, get the big interception, as opposed to just playing what he's supposed to play and making the play. And as it pertains to Tyler Van Dyke, I mean, I think right now, just a theory, I have zero way of proving this or disproving it, but I think he was expecting to go pro after last year. He was expecting to go pro this year, last year injuries, what have you, barred it. And he's trying to be a highlight reel as opposed to making a check down. You know, he's saying, no, I'm not going to get first, second round pick throwing the check down to the running back or to the tight end in the flat or the wide receiver in the flat. I need to make that big play downfield. You know, some of those interceptions, everyone's saying, oh, he can't read the defense. He can't read the defense. I disagree. I think he sees it flat out. He's got all time, all day. I think he's forcing it, trying to make a big play. I could be dead wrong. I have no way of proving that. I can't get into the guy's head. But some of these plays, he's staring right into it, into the coverage. He sees these guys covered. I don't know, he'd have to be blind not to, and he's still making the throws anyway. And I think that's just because he's trying to make that highlight reel play, proving that he can, you know, make the throw no one else can make. And, you know, lately it's been biting him more times than not. We've seen him make the big throw. I mean, you know, when he's on point, he makes some throws that very few guys in college football can make, but he's forcing it a lot of the times too, in my opinion, and that's what's doing it. And then I think to the inverse, I don't think Shannon Dawson's doing the guy any favors either. I think, you know, he had the benefit of the doubt, because I was singing his praises after Texas A&M, but I think the reality is that they didn't have a lot of film on him and didn't know how he was going to be coming out. He was able to catch A&M off guard. And ever since then, anytime he's playing a team worth a damn, this offensive game plans look awfully lackluster. And I hope that can get corrected. I don't know. You know, you were saying earlier in the show, you know, we're 8 games into it. You'd expect that he's got a little better grip on what's happening, you know, and able to
It's so weird, Jake. I mean, teams usually get better as the year goes on. This one so far is pretty much staying the same. You know, it's pretty much staying the same.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we'll see how it finishes out. These last 4 games are going to say a lot. You know, 2-2, I don't know. If we finish 2-2, I think our record is what it says it is. If we finish 9-3 or 10-2, then I think you can count that Georgia Tech loss as a win and say we've made some real substantial progress moving forward. But that's going to involve these guys, you know. So what I was saying to the last caller's point about why can't we ever get our shit together as a program, I think it's because you look at Virginia and you look at Georgia Tech, these kids aren't playing to try to make the NFL. They're playing to win games. They're playing for pride. And, you know, and so they're just playing the game plan ahead of them and the team ahead of them. And a lot of our guys, I think, are freelancing, and they're playing to make the NFL. They're playing to make these big-time highlight reels, and it's a gamble. And some of them, you know, are good enough. Some are not. And I think, last week, I mean, just some of these guys trying to make highlight reel hits and missing, and you don't see Virginia doing that. They're just trying to play sound football. We're way more talented than them, but they're just playing more sound football. They're playing more fundamental, and you see our fundamentals from game to game just break down. And I don't think that's a talent thing. I think that's mental. We've got more talent than just about every team we play, other than Florida State, maybe Clemson, maybe Texas A&M. But, you know, we find ourselves in these, you know, death matches with them because we just, you know, we're a head case. 1 week we're playing fantastic, lights out. Next week it's like, oh, we'll miss 10 tackles this game. Give up 100 extra yards because we're freelancing. And that's just that's the frustrating thing about being a Canes fan. It's we are more talented than these teams, but I think our coaching sometimes leaves it lacking. I think sometimes it's our players that are leaving a lot to be desired. And it's frustrating when you know that you're better than an opponent, but they're showing up to play every week. And with our team, it's 50-50. You never know. But the what I wanted to ask you, what do you think the odds are that this team remains intact, fairly intact? I mean, obviously there's going to be some defection, but I think if we do finish strong, there's a backbone that you can build off of. What do you think the odds
are? I hope it does. It needs to. It really does need to. You know, one of the questions we always ask the posters on canesport.com to post questions before the show, and one of the questions this week was posted by Keese19. I might as well talk about it right now since you're saying the same thing. Who on the team is NFL ready after this season over, and who needs to come back and continue to develop? Man, I think almost everybody needs to come back and continue to develop. I can't name too many guys that I think should be going to the NFL at the end of this year. Azubi?
Yeah, no, that's if a guy has eligibility remaining, which I feel like a lot of these guys do due to COVID, due to, you know, injuries, all that other stuff, I feel like, you know, if Miami ends the season on a high note, say they win out the rest of the season, they get a bowl win or they finish with 10 wins, and, you know, they can bring back a lot of these guys to make another run at that. You know, sometimes you got to think about it too. The upside with NIL would be way more than you going in the 5th, 6th, 7th round for an NFL team and you maybe end up not making a roster. So a lot of different things can factor into that final decision. And like you mentioned, there's not one guy, you know, on the team that I can say, hey, he's a bona fide first-round draft pick. Nothing he can do for the rest of the season or nothing like that'll change that. There's not one guy that we can, you know, really, really say that about. So I feel like
including the seniors, by the way, including the seniors.
You know, I would say Matt Lee, if he left, hey, you know what? Good for you. You're the best center in college football. Go get paid. The other guy, and ironically, I almost find myself slapping my face saying this, but I actually think James Williams left. I wouldn't critique that heavily. I do think he could get better, but I think he's exceeded my expectation I had for him this year at the very least. And I think as of the last several weeks, he's been playing pretty solid football. But other than that, like, you know, Leonard Taylor, Cam Kinchins, even Xavier Restrepo, I don't know. Like, you know.
He might not even get drafted. Absolutely, he's got to come back.
I just think because with him, I do think there's a chance he gets passed up on the roster. And, you know, next year we're seeing a lot more of Rashard Smith and Joseph than we are this year. And, you know, this might be as good as it gets for him. He's having he's had almost 700 yards receiving right now. He's having a hell of a year. He's a guy, he's never going to be a first-round pick. He's too small. He's not, you know, like blazing speed. And so he's a special teams guy. He's a Braxton Berrios guy. And, you know, a guy like that, you say, hey, you know what? I had a pretty good year this year. I play special teams. I'm gonna make a roster and just, you know, work my ass off, trying to stay in the league 4, 5, 6 years, just playing special teams, maybe getting on the field here and there, catching some passes. But other than that, like, you know, but I guess the thing is if you know, these guys don't listen to the agents after this year, I think we could have a monster core going into next year, bolster it a little bit with some recruits, some portal action, and they could be making a serious move. Because, and again, I don't think Tyler Van Dyke should leave, and you know, make it a bona fide competition. And man, you could be making some noise next season. But you know, a lot of these guys do what Miami players have always done in the past. You know, we're gonna see 6, 7 guys unnecessarily defect. Probably 2, 3 of them don't even get drafted. Rest of them go in the third round or third day, you know, 5th, 6th, 7th round picks. And then we're back to square one. And, you know, recruiting has been good, but it hasn't been that good, you know. We don't have a replacement for Cam Kinchins. We don't have a replacement for James Williams. So, you know, we don't have one for, you know, a JVN Cohen. Maybe we do with that. But yeah, I mean, you know, if we can keep this roster fairly intact, finish out strong, 9 wins, next season maybe we're making noise. Who knows? So anyway, I'm gonna let you go with that. Actually, if you guys have anything to add to that, I'd love to hear it. But appreciate your time. Hopefully we have a big win this weekend, and hopefully we're not biting our nails again this week. It would be nice to win one clean.
Get some mo going into tally. That would be awesome.
Yeah. Florida State week. You know, get ready. Get some hype. Get some momentum. That would be nice. So we'll see what happens.
All right, Jake. Yeah, I'm telling you, I was looking at our list, our scholarship tracker, but while he was talking, Zuby, like even if I go down the junior class, like the seniors, they have no choice. They're going to be leaving, and you know, maybe, well, Cam McCormick's trying to get an extra year. I can't imagine they'll give it to him. But you look at Ladson, Tyler Harrell, they put me in the game, and a kickoff bounces off my head. Lichtenstein's been playing okay, but he's a 6th-year senior. He'll be gone. Branson Dean, Anthony Campbell, Keontra Smith, Takori Cash, and Jaden Davis. I personally don't think any of those guys are ready for the National Football League. And then you go down the juniors, TBD, Henry Parrish, Jacoby George, Rashard Smith, Restrepo, Colby Young, Kirk, probably would be back in the portal. He hasn't played at all. Zion Nelson, Javion Cohen, Lou Cristobal, Matt Lee, Jafari Harvey, Mesidor coming back next year, should have be a monster end tandem with Reuben Bain. Leonard Taylor, I don't feel has played well enough to leave. He might try. Harrison Hunt has played really good, but he's not a high NFL pick, I don't think. Chance Williams, got to be thinking about the portal. Thomas Gore will be back. KJ Cloyd, Corey Flagg, Francisco Maigoa, Cam Kitchens, Daryl Porter, James Williams, Devontae Brown. There is nobody on this team, Azubi, that should be thinking, I'm going into the NFL draft.
Yeah, no. I've only guy I'd maybe consider is maybe Daryl Porter, too, because he's kind of having a good year. But like I said, there's not one guy where you can circle and say he's a bona fide. All across the board, everyone you talk to, first-round pick, a guy that can lead. But, like you mentioned, guys see that opportunity, they jump at it, and you can never fault a guy for trying to chase his dreams, but, you never know situations people in and things like that. But from the looks of it, just kind of looking at it, a quick picture thing, and it looks like a lot of these guys should be coming back from Miami, but as we all know, that's not going to be the exact case, and you'll see, five, six, seven guys, leave early, things like that.
Matt Lee might get that notion, and he has had a good year, but I'd love to see him come back and just build on what he's done this year. He's such an important part of the deal on the offensive line. So, we'll see. I say give Matt Lee some real NIL money and ask him to come back. Let's go to 786. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Go ahead. How you doing, Gary?
Doing great. Who's this?
Hurricane coming.
Hey, what's up, man? How are you? Welcome back.
I'm good. I want to ask the main man question first of all. Who we gonna take? Redwine or Jaquan or Williams or Cam?
Who you taking?
Me personally, give me Cedric and give me Jaquan. Why? Football high IQ a little bit higher, which means fewer mental mistakes. Whereas James and Cam, they're more physically gifted, but the IQ is not there. As far as the guy that called that said about he don't know if Inez Cooper had a flag. Yeah, Georgia Tech game on the A.J. Allen running quarterback, which it was a phantom call. We are what our record says we are. 6-2.
That's a cliche.
That's what we are. I mean, and that's what we are. Like, yes. It is what it is. Like, we all know we should be 7-1. The fact of the matter, we are not. And it's like, to the fans, I just have a question. To the complaining one. Me personally, we could win every point. I mean, we could win every game by 1 point. We could win every game. I don't care if we go to 60 overtimes, as long as we win. And I just want to ask some of the fans, what would you rather have? An ugly win or a pretty loss. Take your choice. But you can't have both. Me personally, I'd rather have the ugly win because the pretty loss still going to get talked about. Now, the thing with Tyler Van Dyke, it's like people, I guess teams figured them out or whatever, and it's like you can see it clear as day. They're not going to the checkdowns or whatever. And I think it's maybe you and the guy just called everything, if I'm not mistaken. I'm going to disagree with you guys when you said you shouldn't pull Tyler. And I'm going to tell you why. That might just wake him up. Like, because this is my thing. I hear people always talking about experience, this, that, and the third. And this is my thing to that about experience. You can have 30, 40, 50 years of experience on whatever job it is or whatever it is you're doing. But before you got to that 50, you had to get your first day. You had to get your first hour. You had to get your first week. And this is my thing with players. Like, y'all say Tyler give us the best chance to win. Me, I'm going to disagree with that. And why I say that is, if you're not seeing the field, if you're not 100% healthy, you're not making the proper reads, you're keeping the defense on the field. I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer. I'm not the villain of the season. So how are you giving me the best chance to win? You're not. You're giving me the best chance to lose. And then this is the thing. Like, people always talk about freshman this, freshman that. Gary, you done been around football long enough. And the one thing about football from Pop Warner to the NFL, it just gets a little faster. The players get a little bigger. But at the end of the day, it's 10 yards, touchdown. Stop somebody, kick a field. Everything is the same. And it's like with Reuben Bain, perfect example. How many of those so-called five stars are outperforming him right now? I can't say too many. And if Tyler's not giving us the best chance to win, why not go with the freshman quarterback? I mean, why not? Like, and to me, this is just my opinion, whether it's offense or defense. Interception is an interception, regardless of who threw it. And if my first string cornerback or my first string anything on defense, if you're constantly getting abused out there, what's the difference with it happening to the second or third string? It's no difference, because if my first string cornerback is constantly getting bombed and getting smoked, like, how is it hurting me to put my second string or third string in there and the same thing happens, so it's not hurting me? So with Tyler, it's like, you're not seeing the field. Once you lock on with Strepo, you stuck on him. Like, you literally stuck on him. And then on top of that, not only are you stuck on him, everybody in the stand, the whole team, everybody in America, whoever watching the game, know you're finna throw the ball at 7. And then you said something, I think about a week ago, Gary, as far as the Mahomes to Kelce, the difference being when Mahomes throwing that ball to Kelce, he coming up with it. He making it happen. It's not happening with TBD and Restrepo. It's just not. You're trying to force feed the same guy. Every chance you get, you force feeding the guy. It's not working. So if I'm a coach, like, I'm putting, like y'all said, y'all wouldn't take him out the game because of a quarterback controversy. So you mean to tell me you and everything y'all trying to tell me, so now it's I before a team or I and a team? It can be an I and a team. If you take two I's, cross them up, you have a T. You take three I's, put them together, you got an A. You take four I's, put them together, you got an E. Take four I's, put them together, you got an M. That's the only way it's going to happen. So if this guy is constantly putting us in harm's way, keeping the defense on the field, how is he giving the team the best chance to win, especially if you're not 100%?
I mean, I think that's a little bit of an overreaction. I mean, you say constantly putting the team in harm's way. I mean, he's had a few bad plays in each game. And I'm not saying making an excuse and saying they're okay. They're not okay. But I don't think it's at the crisis level. I think the mistakes he's making can be corrected. They got to correct them. They got to coach him better. He's got to take the coaching. He's got to prepare better, and he's got to perform. Period. No excuses.
Me personally, I'm a TVD fan, but I'm a Hurricane fan before I'm a player fan. I rule with the Hurricanes. Like, players come and go. Hurricanes gonna be here. So it's like not me, but some of the so-called experts, this is the thing. Like, they have all the five stars, this, the five stars, that, right? And if you look at, like, the NFL, yeah, you see a couple of five stars. But if I'm not mistaken, it seems like the two and the three stars and the no stars are outshining the four and five stars once they get to the NFL. I'm just saying, that's just me. Like, Antonio Brown, perfect example. Like, if he would have kept his sanity, if he would have kept his mental status up to par, no telling what the guy's going through, but just think about it, Gary. If that guy would have kept his head on straight, there's no way possible you couldn't tell me this guy wasn't going to be a top three receiver all time in the NFL at the pace he was on. So it's like we get stuck on stars, we get stuck on this, but I kind of like the old Hurricane way. Like, if you got heart, you got heart. Like, you can have all the talent in the world, and it's like the guy play for somebody in basketball, Patrick Beverly. He said this. He said, what's a shame is it's always the guys that's the most talented that wants to put in the least amount of work. Tyler Van Dyke, get in the film room, buddy. Look and see what you're doing. Like, we going to constantly say, okay, well, I can't keep throwing interceptions. I got to do this. If you're not moving the offense, you're not moving the offense. Man, let somebody else try to move the offense. Man, this ain't personal, this business. Feelings are meant to get hurt in football. That's just what it is. If you're not better than the next man, or you not doing your job, or you not doing what you're supposed to do, then guess what? Next man up. And like I said, before you put me on hold, Gary, I want to ask all the fans who are always complaining, what you rather have, an ugly win or a pretty loss? You know,
ugly win every time.
There you go. Ugly win. There you go.
Ugly win every time.
There you go. There you go. That's
all righty, man.
It's like, all right, y'all have a good one.
Thank you for being part of the show. You got it. All right, last call of the night. Let's go to the 305. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Hey, Gary. How are you this evening?
Hey, what's up, Adam? How's everything?
Good. A couple things. One, what you mentioned about Blount, I do go on other websites, and it said on Kane's County that he was meeting with UM today. So I don't know if there was confusion.
You talking about Armando Blount?
Yeah.
We were at practice. We saw him on the practice field today. He said he has not been engaged. Now, maybe he got engaged after practice. He went there tonight. Maybe. But
yeah,
as of about 6 o'clock,
oh, okay.
He had not been engaged. Huh?
Oh, okay. I was just reading the article, and it's
don't believe everything you read. Because we read the same thing. We read the same things, and we went out and talked to him face-to-face today. So I don't know what's going on.
Okay. I was just wondering if it was, like, lost in translation. Other things. Yeah, who knows? It's the world of recruiting. Also, and maybe it's just, like, pros versus college, and I said this sort of in jest, but I'm now actually being serious. You have an innovative offensive coach in Miami, and they play in the same stadium. I honestly think Mario could learn a little from Mike McDaniel, just even going for it in no man's land. And I know they're different types of coaches, and it's a different game, but watching the two offenses is like night and day. And I want to hear your thought on it.
Find me Tyreek Hill. Find me Tyreek Hill and put him in this offense, and maybe it wouldn't be so much night and day. It's night and day because of Tyreek Hill.
No, but
and Jalen Waddle, I'll throw him in there too, Adam. Give me those two guys.
No, I get what you're saying, but I mean more the aggressiveness, the going for it on fourth and four in no man's land, whereas with Mario would putt. I know
Mario
the players are different.
Mario is not bashful about going for it on fourth down. You will see him go for it on a fourth down and have it not convert, and it will cost Miami a game one day. He is very aggressive on fourth down. They have not been in that many of those situations. Think about a lot of these coaches, Adam, a lot of these coaches, they cost themselves games. I was watching the Penn State, I think Ohio State game a couple weeks ago, and James Franklin, I think it was, went for it on fourth down. He was down 7, and they went for it on fourth down from their own 30 with 7 minutes left in the game, and they didn't get it, and Ohio State went boom, 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 scored a touchdown, and they were done. They're out of the game. He's got the best defense in the country. He should have punted the football. So you got to be careful what you wish for when it comes to going for it on fourth down, Adam.
No, I know. And McDaniel once went for it this year against Denver on fourth and one and on our own 30 and lost it. Luckily, it didn't
lost. Miami. Yeah, you're not Yeah, that's to me, that's gambling. Okay, you might as well be at a craps table. I'd rather be at a craps table than go for it on fourth down from my own 30.
Exactly. No, I'm just saying, like, the offenses are completely different, and it's amazing that the Dolphins finally have a better offense than UM, just suffering all those years under Flores.
Tyreek Hill, man. Tyreek Hill.
Yes.
That guy is a different dude.
A couple other things that I wanted to touch. I don't know if you ever read The Athletic, but Nate Tice on The Athletic said Tyler Van Dyke was his quarterback 3 this year, after obviously Drake Mays and Caleb. And I wanted to get your thoughts on him if he were to come out, or if he were to come out, it would be like a Brad Kaya situation where
he goes out of his mind. He's out of his mind if he goes out. Brad Kaya was in a better position than Tyler Van Dyke's in right now. He's out of his mind if he goes out. Must come back, play his senior season, must work like a maniac in the offseason on reading defenses. And whether he plays at Miami or plays somewhere else next year, well, I imagine that will be determined these last 4 games. He needs to stay in college. That's my opinion.
Oh, okay. Just those couple of questions. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
All right, Azubi. We're going to attack a few of these questions that were submitted on the message boards at canesport.com. And I talked about the first one. Hoyas Brave Bills wants to know if the tight ends are finally going to get to eat more. Azubi, I can't imagine that we are going to go another game and they're not going to throw the tight ends. I would watch the tight ends a lot at the NC State this weekend. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I feel like you kind of have to throw that wrinkle in into the offense. You're going to have the fan base pulling, you know, the hair out their head. But, I mean, we saw, you saw Cameron Corman catch a check down and lead to an A.J. Allen touchdown. So, I mean, you get him involved and good things happen. So hopefully Shannon Dawson kind of takes that, notes it up and kind of, you know, puts a different wrinkle in the offense and kind of gets those guys involved. Obviously, you know, Elijah Royal is not 100%, but you still have Riley Williams that is more than able to run a route, catch a pass. Cam McCormick can catch a pass. So I think, you know, it's not more of a you need to than you want to see. You need to see them getting more involved in the offense.
Jay Collette, my buddy, wants to know, how would we grade the coach Shannon Dawson so far this year? They played 8 games. I'd give them a 6 out of 8. What's that? 75%? What's is that? That's a C. I'd give them a C so far with the chance to move up. He's got 4 games left. How about you, Azubi?
Yeah, I'd have to give him a B minus, just right above a C, right, you know, nothing crazy. He's had his moments, and then he's had his moments, you know. Obviously, Miami's offense came out real hot this year, and injuries and, you know, certain things with your quarterback not having a guy, and obviously that all plays a factor in it. But, hey, that's why you got paid the big bucks. You got to use your personnel to the best you can and get the most out of them. So right now I have him at a B-minus. I'm giving him an 80%, and we'll see if he can stay in that A-B range or drops to a C or a D with these last 4 games.
A.D. Anthony wants to know if Dawson's going to adjust and start using those backs and tight ends and take advantage of what's there. I'm going to say absolutely yes, man. He's a good coach. I mean, he's going to adjust, and like, he's learning. He's learning his personnel. I don't minimize that at all. And, you know, TVD's probably thrown him for a few loops this year because TVD on the practice field, I'm sure, is great. You know, when they're, you know, I mean, it's a whole different deal. And but I think we're going to see Shannon Dawson shine a little bit more this week. I hope we do. And, I do. I think he will adjust. Does the performance of Reuben Bain, Azubi, help Miami flip one of those 5-star defensive linemen that they have missed on so far?
No, I can't say that. I mean, I feel like there's so much more to recruiting and saying, hey, this guy's doing good here. Obviously, it does help to see Miami given an opportunity to a true freshman, a position that you're going to be in the next year.
but I cannot say it is going to directly help a prospect flip over to Miami, because if that was the case, I mean, you'd see, you know, Miami with the best tackle in the country with how Francis Malagueño is playing, but that's just not the case. Obviously, it helps, and that's something you can sell to a kid, but there's so much more to recruiting than just say, hey, this guy's doing it, you can do it too.
Again, Jay Clint wants to know, if Tyler Van Dyke throws interceptions early in the game on Saturday, should they, would they put in Emery?
No, I don't need it. Shannon Dawson kind of said it Monday too. He said, hey, I ride or die for my guys. You know, it seems like he's riding that Tyler Van Dyke train until it crashes and burns. So I can't see them pulling him if he has a couple bad interceptions. And I forgot who talked about it earlier. I feel like that just creates a lot of trouble heading into that Florida State game if you pull Tyler Van Dyke, NC State.
I would be grimacing. I would be pulling my hair out. I would be covering my eyes. I would be screaming, no, no, not a quarterback controversy. Please, no. But I'm going to go out there and say I think they would put in Emery if that starts going bad. I think they are at a desperation point of the season. And I think that there's pressure on Tyler this week to get his act together. And I think they're coaching him really hard. I think Shannon Dawson's doing everything that he can humanly do this week to get him ready to go on Saturday. And I think they expect him to play well. And I think if it's going poorly and you got another middle of the pack ACC team that's lingering around the entire game, like Georgia Tech did, Clemson, Virginia, I'm going to go out on the limb and say, I think they might do it. And I will be absolutely dying if they do, because I'm with you, Azubi. I don't think that that's the answer for this season. I really don't, with what is coming up a week from Saturday. All right, MSK Fish 101 wants us to talk about the development of James Williams this year. I think James has played pretty good. He's, you know, Azubi, he does a couple, you know, things a game where you say, oh, man, that was, you know, a little knuckleheady or whatever. But this has definitely been the best model of James Williams that we've seen so far. That said, I hope he comes back next year.
Yeah, 100%. I feel like he's buying into the system. He's playing kind of that different role where he's dropping into the boxes of the linebacker. He's dropping into coverage. He's making the big tackles. Obviously, he's not perfect at tackling. I know it's perfect at making tackles. But, you know, he had the big stop on third down versus Virginia with the big hit. He's made up. I feel like every game, you know, Gary, you're next to me saying, hey, James Williams is looking, you know, better and better each game. And, you know, it's true because you just see the development. And you see, I feel like he's just playing free and he's playing fun and he's just being him out there. So I've been very impressed with what James Williams has done this year.
All right. And last but not least, Miami-Dade for Life, number 2004, says, after hearing answers in this week's press conference about Ja'Cari Brown, was it just lip service regarding his development, or is it genuine in terms of him developing with true anticipation of him really competing for the starting job next season? What do you think, Azubi?
I mean, that's a funny question.
This is why you get paid the big bucks here at Kane Sport now, young man. This one's on you.
Yeah, no. What head coach is going to come out and say he's not doing anything and he's not going to be a part of this program next year? Obviously, they have to fluff it up and make it sound like, you know, rainbows and butterflies, like I said at the beginning of the show. I would hope that Ja'Cari Brown is making progress in the right direction. Obviously, the last time that we had eyes on him in a live-action game situation, that wasn't the case. But, you know, we saw him throw probably for 5 minutes each practice towards the beginning of the fall and haven't seen him since. So there might have been a lot that has changed over the last 8 weeks, and there might have been nothing that has changed the last 8 weeks. They're not going to tell you the 100% honest truth, but I would say yes, he has made progress, but, I mean, it's not enough progress to beat out Emery Williams to beat QB2, so not enough to him to have a real future at Miami, in my honest opinion.
Probably not, but he's too great of an athlete. You're not going to give up on him. You're not going to make him leave, okay? If he says he wants to leave because he wants to go try to play quarterback somewhere else, you might try to talk him out of that. I still personally believe that as a offensive specialist, this kid can be absolutely elite if he works at it. So I don't know, man. I don't know what the future holds with Jakari. A lot might depend on what they do in December in recruiting. You know, where are they at with the quarterbacks after this next month? What do they do in the portal? All those things will be interrelated. And how does Jakari feel about it all? You know, I mean, you know, maybe he can go somewhere like back home to Georgia Tech or something like that and have a chance to be QB1, you know? You know, I don't know. I don't know the answer. I just know I think the world of the kid. He's a really good kid. He's a good locker room guy. He just has a little problem in that he wants to be a quarterback and he's not an accurate passer at this point. And usually guys that are not accurate passers at this point are never accurate passers. I'd be an elite skill player, the better for him, but I don't know if that'll ever happen. So we'll see what happens. With that, Azubi, it's time to go and have a little dinner or a little snack or, you know, whatever you millennials do at this time of night. I get ready for bed. But we want to thank everybody for being part of the show tonight. Great show, great calls. Thank you for calling in. Canes at NC State Saturday night. Make sure you watch it. We'll be back here next Tuesday night to slice and dice everything up. So for Azubi and all the callers, I'm Gary. Thanks for being part of the show tonight, everybody. We'll see you next time.